And now, right before lunch, I would like to invite F. Sessions Cole III, who is the Park J. White Professor of Pediatrics, Assistant Vice Chancellor for Children's Health, Executive Vice Chair of the Department of Pediatrics, and Chief of the Division of Newborn Medicine at Washington University School of Medicine. He's also the Chief Medical Officer at St. Louis Children's Hospital. Dr. Cole's research examines the genetic basis for inherited lung disease and respiratory diseases in infancy. And he is also the site principal investigator at Washington University and St. Louis Children's Hospital for PEDSNET, which he's going to tell you about in 30 seconds. Dr. Cole earned his PhD from Yale Medical Center. Welcome.
Thank you, Dr. Waters, for the opportunity to speak at this conference. I'd also like to thank Dr. Waters and the steering committee for including children. There is no more important population for precision medicine and precision prevention than children, because the survival of children is much longer than the survival of adults, and the impact...
I'm sorry to interrupt you. That microphone isn't working.
Okay. Just add another one. And the impact of precision prevention and precision medicine, whether that's judged by cost of intervention or whether that's judged by area under the curve for intervention impact, there is no more important or higher impact population than children. Now, children are different, not small adults, so I'll try to share with you a few of the opportunities that children present. Not discussed today, but I hope sort of you'll get a sense from my discussion, is the also extraordinary opportunity for precision medicine and precision prevention in pregnancy. The 283 days of European descent gestation on average and 273 days of African descent gestation provide an unusually high specific activity opportunity to address and prevent multiple childhood and adult diseases. Witness, for example, the story about folic acid supplementation and the reduction in risk and frequency of spina bifida in the United States population. You'll read in today's New England Journal, if you get it by electronic mail, 5 p.m. this afternoon when it's unembargoed, about an exciting development that leverages unique developmental windows that are defined by genomic variants and provide the opportunity effectively to eliminate a disease by understanding this developmental and genomic dimension in children. Okay. So, and the final thing I'll say is that thanks very much to Dr. Waters, but I'm just a baby doctor. And in my universe, the baby is the boss. So I just do whatever the baby tells me to do. I do have some disclosures. I am a member of an expert panel for Illumina. Illumina is a gene sequencing device manufacturer. And I serve on the scientific advisory board for a company called ClearLine MD, which is focused on trying to develop devices that reduce the risk of air embolism from venous lines. We put a lot of large vascular lines into babies, especially premature babies, to try to help them, and air embolism is a problem. So, first of all, a little background about child health. Here is an overview or summary of pediatric population trends in the United States from 1950 through projected 2020. You, I'm sure, all acknowledge the great baby boom that occurred after World War II. And since about 2010, the pediatric population, that is to say between birth and 18 years of age, has been pretty stable, and it's projected to remain relatively stable given the current reproductive and immigration trends in the United States. Similarly, the sort of fractions of children who are between 0 and 5, 6 and 11, and 12 and 17 will remain approximately constant. And children represent about 20 or 25% of the total United States population. They consume less than 10% of the healthcare dollars. And the reason is because children are pretty healthy. They are much less likely to require hospitalization than adults. Here is an overview of hospital stays. Each of the different colored lines represents a different age group, 75 and over, 65 to 74, 45 to 65, 18 to 44, and children, 1 to 17. And not surprisingly, there has been a decrease among most of these patient groups in terms of need for hospitalization. And children, as you can see, are somewhere around 6 to 8-fold less likely to require hospitalization. Therefore, the amount of electronic health record data that we actually have about children is different than the amount of electronic health data, at least from hospitalization stays, than we have for adults. In addition, most of the data that we have about children are focused on growth and development, and we're just beginning to acquire data, primarily from ambulatory settings, about the importance of environment. There's no question that stress has a big impact on children, and stress has a big impact on pregnant women. So children are different in terms of their frequency of disease and in terms of their overall proportion of the population. So as I briefly mentioned, there are rapid developmental changes both during pregnancy and during childhood, which make precision medicine and precision prevention not only genomic variant specific, but also age specific. There are developmental epochs or windows when genomic variants confer susceptibility if environmental exposure occurs to a specific variant. And once that developmental window passes, that genomic variant doesn't or may not have any impact on childhood disease. So that's different than how we have generally thought about genomic variants determining adult genetic risk. Precision medicine for children really requires that each child's genome, developmental stage, and environmental exposure be taken into account. And one of the challenges of precision medicine for children is integrating these various sources of data and individualizing that for a child when one is making a diagnostic decision or a treatment strategy decision. So in the context of these challenges for children, which basically acknowledge that children are not necessarily just little adults, there was the formation of a network of children's hospitals in response to the PCORI funding initiative in 2014. And the creative and innovative name of this child health oriented network of children's hospitals is PEDSnet. It was one of 13 CDRNs and 20 patient powered research networks which were funded by the PCORI initiative in 2014. I'm sure you're aware that the CDRNs are partnerships among health clinics, hospitals, and other health systems, and are able to collect and use information from multiple data sources. There's been a major focus on electronic health records. However, we've also begun to do claims data and pharmacy benefits data. For example, we have tried to use the Miami area EHR and claims data from Medicaid to determine whether or not we could estimate Zika risk or monitor Zika frequency when the Zika sort of epidemic was ongoing. We have recently developed here at Washington University an arrangement with Express Scripts, the pharmacy benefits manager for previously about 100 million, now I guess about 60 million individuals in the United States, which permits us to match in a de-identified way pharmacy benefits information about whether or not children filled their prescriptions, or adults filled their prescriptions, and specific disease-specific outcomes. So these are some of the kinds of things that the CDRNs and specifically PEDSNET have been working on. The patient-powered research networks are usually formed by organizations like the Inflammatory Bowel Disease Group or Improve Care Now. We've had quite the Cystic Fibrosis Foundation. We've had quite an active interaction with Improve Care Now to try to promote information exchange on specific health issues or diseases and find answers to improve health outcomes that are important to patients and families. I'm sure you're all here today because you understand that what providers think might be an important outcome to improve and what certainly patients and families perceive as an important outcome to improve may not always be congruent. We also, of course, in pediatrics, have the opportunity that children are not autonomous decision makers. And there is an evolution of autonomy from birth to adolescence or age 21. And so the decision-making autonomy is in partnership with both the child or the patient and the parents or legal guardians. So for children, because of the relatively low frequency of disease, it's very important for large networks of pediatric patients to be formed to really try to determine or to try to generate statistically meaningful cohort size and that will permit comparison of treatments, and I'll show you an example of this in 1 second. Our network now provides access to PCORI common data model formatted electronic health record data from over 6 million children in 8 geographically dispersed children's hospitals that have been gathered since 2009. So that, on the one hand, sounds like a lot of children, but given the frequency of disease and especially the many orphan or rare diseases in children, it's a rich resource. It's a rich resource for us. And so PEDSNET is a national community of hospitals, healthcare organizations, researchers, clinicians, and patients and families. And we've been very intentional about right from the formation of PEDSNET, including patients and families from diverse backgrounds and from different diseases, whose goal is to identify and study the most important research questions that can reduce child suffering and support healthy development as quickly and as inexpensively as possible. You can imagine, and I'll show you an example of this in a minute, that doing a randomized clinical trial on children with diseases that are not particularly frequent in the population is difficult because there just aren't that many of them, and cost is considerable. Using propensity scoring and other strategies, it's now beginning to be possible with a cohort size like this to be able to actually do effectiveness research in children, especially around medication exposures. So PEDSNET is a learning health system that's focused on children. It's organized around communities of patients, families, frontline clinicians, researchers, and health system leaders who want to produce and use pediatric health care data to improve child health. We, in PEDSNET, create these large electronic health and healthcare data sets. PEDSNET conducts observational research, clinical trials, and population health studies in clinical care settings to provide better information for health and healthcare decision making and hopefully direct and improve precision medicine and precision prevention for children. And of course, we're trying to improve the quality of care for each patient by applying new knowledge generated through research, and this is from at the point of care, and this is from the Institute of Medicine 2007 Learning Healthcare System Workshop Survey, Workshop Summary, which sort of outlines how research studies, generate questions where it goes through knowledge and network generation, application of the best possible available evidence for each patient, and then hopefully this application gets to the point of care where patients and clinicians can use this information to improve child health. So let's talk about a couple of examples. One is medication dosing in children. One of the things that is a little bit different about children is that the amount of ampicillin that a baby receives who weighs 3 kilograms is different than the amount of ampicillin that an older child who weighs 30 kilograms or an adolescent who weighs 100 kilograms receives. And because in general, children are underrepresented in clinical trials, including especially pharmaceutical testing, despite the efforts by the FDA and the government to motivate pharmaceutical companies to study children. So in 2005, at clinicaltrials.gov, only 6% of more than 19,000 trials were focused on children, birth to 17 years of age, although this group represents 20 to 25% of the population. And of course, off-label prescribing is estimated to involve about 85% of 57,000 hospitalized children. I live in a place, the neonatal intensive care unit, where we do a lot of ad-libbing when it comes to medication administration, dosing interval, et cetera. And most of the time, we get away with it. Some of the time, we don't. So PEDSNET provides infrastructure through which the results and outcomes of clinical decisions can inform best practices, implementation science, and new research directions. And because serious illness is uncommon in children, generating and applying new knowledge require these networks of institutions. The common data model which PCORI sort of required PEDSNET to use, which is great, standardization of data is great. But when the PCORI model was generated, there wasn't clearly a lot of understanding about the fact that, for example, gestational age is a key determinant of adult outcomes. I have advocated strongly to my pulmonary and critical care adult colleagues that in addition to the number of pack years of smoking, which I know determines COPD risk, gestational age should also be a part of the initial evaluation of anybody with lung disease. If you're born before 36 completed weeks of gestation, your lungs will not grow normally by the time you're 21. Period. There is no ambiguity about those data. So in any event, we've had to help adapt the PCORI model, the common data model, to include some of the things that are important for children. We've also been very successful at including families in research design and decision making. And we've tried to improve pediatric medication efficacy and safety through therapeutic drug monitoring, and specifically, we're trying to use electronic health records for gathering of drug dosing dashboards that are disease, age, sex, and race specific to try to get around the need to do pharmacokinetic and pharmacodynamic studies. Another example is the Learn from Every Patient program at Nationwide Children's Hospital, which is one of our PEDSNET hospitals, which is designed to integrate research, clinical care, and quality improvement to improve care for children with cerebral palsy. There was the implementation of standardized care. This is a big problem for providers. I'm sure it's different for adult providers, but it's a big problem for pediatric providers, each of whom thinks that she or he knows exactly what the right way to do things for each child is. There was a systematic and discrete collection of research data as a part of all clinical visits, designed specifically to answer physicians' clinical questions and to improve patient care. So here are the data from 131 children at Nationwide who were compared to 689 children with cerebral palsy at the same center who received standard care but not standardized care. And In this program, inpatient admissions, total inpatient days, emergency department visits, urgent care visits, and total health care charges were all down considerably relative to comparison group. So PEDSnet provides a PCORI-compatible infrastructure for a national learning health system focused on child health. One other implication of this PEDSnet system is that hopefully at some point we can link children to pregnant women. Today, it's not possible in PCORI. I can guarantee you that if you looked in the pregnancy, you would find things. David Barker, for those of you who are familiar with the Barker hypothesis, discovered that birth weight is a very good predictor of risk for adult atherosclerotic cardiovascular disease. Okay, that's just one example of the importance of linking pregnancy data to baby data. And then the other thing is getting longitudinal data about individuals. So PEDSnet permits evaluation of strategies to individualize care for each child, and it also addresses relevant regulatory, which I haven't talked about, legal and data use agreements. Here are the proud members of PEDSnet, and again, I'd like to thank the organizers for thinking about children in a conference about precision medicine and precision prevention. Thank you very much. And children are cute too, so that's also another good thing. Yes?
The data from the CDRNs and the PPRNs, I presume, are mostly being fed back into PCORI-funded research to inform what kinds of studies to do. But is it also being used for other kinds of research, NIH-funded?
Yeah, so the question is whether PCORI-funded data generation is being used by other for studies funded by other sources, and the answer to that is absolutely yes. I think PEDSnet now has around $30 million, plus or minus, in NIH, AHRQ, CDC, and other kinds of research. These are one of the problems with PEDSnet, as I'm sure it is with the other PCORI networks, is that trying to interrogate the database requires iterative development of the query strategy. The common vocabulary or the common ontology of the terms is terrific, but there are interinstitutional differences in how institutions code asthma or code cystic fibrosis or code other things. And so once you have tuned your inquiry strategy, then there is a sort of a expectation-requirement that those queries are actually verified by some chart review of some fraction of the charts that you've pulled or the patients you've pulled out. So that's the sort of current status. And so, but the bottom line is that these data are definitely being used for other funded projects. Yes. All data are de-identified in PEDSnet.
That is correct. And also, I assume that there are scenarios that there might be siblings, subjects from the same family or relatives included in PEDSnet. Is there a way to identify those relationships? Because for research study, particularly for genetic study, this could be very important.
Yeah, so the question is, can you see family relationships in the PEDSnet data? And the answer to that question is no, not officially. Okay, but there are definitely strategies that are being worked on to try to do that. For example, if you connect the child to her, his mother, then that would be one way of ensuring that you had, were able to identify brothers and sisters or siblings. But I think that's, again, I have a conflict of interest here, but family studies from a genomic standpoint are much more feasible from a cohort size perspective when one uses a family rather than trying to compare cases and controls.
Thank
because there are so many. Dr. Bonferroni begins to complain about case-control comparisons. So, yes.
Where do insurers stand in terms of, because if the claims data was linked by a family, then that would make this a lot easier. So where do insurers stand?
Yes, the question is where do insurers stand? So there is a small axis of the willing. There's a lot of sensitivity among insurers because, you know, clearly doing business with us means that the insurer may inadvertently divulge information, which is personal health information, to a person at another institution with no relationship with the patient. So that's a big problem. We have worked very hard, for example, in the Zika project, in de-identifying insurer information and using fields, you know, not birth date and not Social Security number, to be able to match with reasonable accuracy claims data and EHR data. But the insurers are not by any means unanimous about sort of their comfort with this. Yes?
Thanks for this great presentation. With the high rate of not having the data you might like to have, like the 6% of children in the pharmaceutical trials and the ed living in the neonatal ICU, there must be a lot of circumstances where someone says, we're not sure exactly what's best to do for this child. We'd like to look at the big data set and see what happened with other children like that. And I'm sure you've heard this being done in other institutions. And I wonder if you encourage or even allow someone to do, kind of look at the data set to say what happened to a patient, like patients like this previously.
Yeah. So the question is, if given the sort of imperfect data that are out there, is it possible when one is faced with a decision about an individual child to leverage a much larger cohort of children who may have received that drug or may have, gotten that device? And the answer to that question is no. We're not doing that right now. I think it would be definitely a goal for the future, but right now I think at least PEDSNET is more focused on trying to do clinical effectiveness research where they're comparing groups rather than individualization of therapy based on the depth of data in the PEDSNET database. Thank you very much.
So it is lunchtime. I'd like to start by thanking our morning speakers. They have done a fantastic job, in my humble opinion. And I know that there are probably a few of you who are not going to make the afternoon presentations. Before you leave, please, please, please complete the evaluation for the morning sessions and then drop the evaluations in the boxes by the door. They have either a pink or an orange sign on them. As for the rest of you, it is lunchtime. I believe you can pick up your lunches in the atrium where we were, and then we can take it to the Great Hall B, I believe. There should be signs. So thank you. Look forward to seeing you in an hour.